I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, y'all. This is Joe Tower, and here's a little treatise on some changes we're making at Tales of Melancholy to better reflect what we think y'all want, and also what the fuck is going on in the world around us. Tales of Melancholy will now alternate the lineups of its live shows with all male and all female performers. And, I don't know, there may even be periods of time where we'll be predominantly or forever female. We choose to be on the right side of this goddamn revolution, guys. In addition, we're adding a bonus feature to our podcast. Each month, we'll release our usual two new storytelling episodes by two new storytellers recorded live at one of our past shows, but also we'll be including a third and an additional episode, a one-on-one conversation between me and a past or current performer who, for whatever reason, needs a little more time at the mic. It'll be a discussion about individual and specific tales of folly, but also the role that both tales and folly play in all of our lives. What we have to deliver is good stories. Stories that offer a certain brand of shameful relatability. Shame around the choices we've made in our lives that aren't the proud, valiant, admirable choices, but rather the self-serving and stupid choices of the asshole, the idiot, the buffoon, of the simple-minded human who, in that particular moment, was just trying to get through, man. It doesn't matter who you are, you've all got a real good story about doing dumb shit. Not to rehash an old lament, but here is another Tales of Melancholy one-on-one that was a result of that technical gaffe from the show last year, our first ever all-female lineup wherein we lost the sound file that contained the recording. And in order to rectify it, my producer Brian and I asked all the ladies from the lineup if they'd sit down with me, Joe Tower, and talk about their story, but also other stories from their life, from their work, from LA, from love, etc., etc. And we're really, really sorry and we feel so, so bad. So this episode is very, very special because not only was it the first one-on-one that we recorded, but it's also with the LA storytelling fairy godmother, as she puts it, Jessie Rosen. In addition to being a very dear friend of mine, Jessie is a super talented writer and storyteller, hostess of the famed and at one time exclusively female Sunday Night Sex Talks, and blog keeper of the now put to rest 20 Nothings, a blog she kept for 10 years that was featured in Forbes and Time Magazine as one of the top 25 blogs. So from Eagle Rock Brewery, where we did, in fact, have LA's best BLT. Here's our Tales of Melancholy one-on-one with Jessie Rosen.
Do you want a beer?
I'll have your, let's see. I'm just going to have your Pilsner.
All right, cool.
Rafter? Yeah.
You don't have any gluten-free beers for the cool kids, right?
No, we have ciders and stuff. They're all pretty dry ciders.
It's okay. I think I'm just going to have a glass of rosé.
Sparkling or regular?
Well, regular. Cool. Regular. Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, I was going to say, can we share?
Yeah, let's share something.
Like, trying to stay away from any gluten, which is so annoying.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what I might just do is have a little gem salad.
Do it.
Boring. What are you going to have? Will you have something?
I mean, I actually might.
Even the breakfast stuff.
The BLT.
I know. I would get it if I were you. It's really special.
What have I got to lose?
No, you only. This is a win.
You can't lose with the BLT, even a bad one.
No, but this is a really good one. Okay. The bread is unreal.
Hey.
Thanks.
Thank you.
No,
thank you.
I'm thrilled to do it.
And I'm sorry.
I was like, do I remember this story?
For losing the recording. Feel terrible, but
yeah, I feel like it's actually very interesting. It's a different format.
Well, it's a good evolution, I think, for the podcast, and it gives me the opportunity to like talk about storytelling with you.
Well, not like
are
that,
you
do.
The godmother of storytelling in LA?
Fairy godmother.
I think you.
No, I'm not. Margot Leibniz.
Well,
I did not. No, I certainly. In fact, one of the reasons
that show, your show though,
it's different.
5 years
Sex Talks
now?
Is different. 6 years. 6 years, yeah. Banana. And I've been, it's interesting you should bring it up because I need to make some changes to keep it fresh and keep myself going. You get it?
Same way. And I feel like we're doing it right now, and me doing like
so I've been all thinking
ladies,
about that.
I'm doing all ladies every other show.
Month helps. Just change helps. I'm doing a thing. This was your wife's idea. I'm doing a thing where I partner with, stay tuned for the invite, another person to help me produce the show.
Smart.
So it's my friends and your friends every other month. So it's not a lot of pressure.
Also, I think your Instagram takeover.
Yeah.
I think your lineup's taking over the Instagram.
Yeah.
Is great promotion.
Yeah. Because I can't. You know what? Not only do I not Instagram, social media does not come naturally to me.
Not at all.
And the other thing is, nor
should it for our generation.
Yeah.
I feel like. But let me ask you this: you do every month.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot.
There was a period of time before No Boys Allowed went away where I was doing every month. No, excuse me. I was doing every month and then an extra one every other month.
Because I tried to do it.
So some months had
when
to.
We
it was
started,
too much.
I tried to do it every month and I was like, this is not going to happen.
It's really hard. You find yourself scrambling.
Yeah.
I try to book in advance.
I have
my kind of go-to people.
Well, now you have your dedicated spot at UCB.
Yeah, which helps because I have people submitting to me. So I have completed stories, which is huge. The problem is, I mean, if I were doing this right, I would be booking well in advance. I would just be on it in a way that, like, my other work doesn't allow me to be on it.
But it's hard in LA to pin down people that far in advance because even, like,
6 weeks is, like, the furthest out.
Yeah, because, like, people duck out.
Well, people cancel all the time.
So you gotta have your backup.
You gotta be kind of prepared for it, and your people you can call on, and like, you know, your stories you know. And every show is not an A+. Like, that's the other thing. That's the thing about a monthly show. Like, some of them are just clunkers.
You're just gonna have to, like,
it just happens.
Suck it up.
One of the things that I need to do a better job of is going to fucking storytelling shows.
100%. Me too.
So
I don't go to
huge,
any.
It's a huge thing for me. And if I did, every lineup would have someone that is different than me. And that could be different age, that could be different race, it could be different gender. Like, it just.
You should get Andrew T on your show, too.
I don't know Andrew.
Andrew hosts the podcast Yo, Is This Racist?
Oh, yeah.
He's great. He's always great. And we've had, Alex and I have had him on our other podcast. He's like our
Wild
podcast
brush.
MVP. He's like a guest where we're just like,
yeah.
We literally need someone who says smart and funny things all the time.
Yeah.
He's the one we
need. Yeah, and like expansion, like I find that once I meet a Jenny who connects me to five other people, suddenly those five other people, like it's a slower growth.
Yeah.
But it has been working.
Okay.
And then I'm able to, but then, you know, it's such a puzzle piece, right? Because you've got to, in a given month, pull to create a diverse cast.
Oh, and you're doing a thing now where you're like, your lineup is like storyteller, 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 but then you're doing these like, teachable, like...
I'm trying to do, like, a...
That's awesome.
Like, a weird feature every month.
It's great.
Where
it's
like...
so great.
Because I want this to... I want Sex Talks to be a resource and experience around sexual content. And that, to me, is more than just stories. Like, I want you to come and your takeaway...
Like, learn something.
Yeah, to be like, you learn something.
And everybody gets to walk out with a little, like...
Yeah.
Sex toy. Or
yeah, something.
We walked out with sex toys that one show.
Yeah, but and it can be... For me, like, it can be anything. Like... I don't know if it's a thing as much anymore, but there was a period of time and I'm trying to get someone on, like, professional cuddling, like, cuddling sessions and, like, people seeking cuddling.
People do that, right?
Yeah, it's something people do. And, like, to me, that's sexual. So, like, for someone to come and talk about that would be, that's perfect for me.
It's great. There are also people that, like, just, like, yeah, like, huggers.
Totally.
Professional huggers.
The next person I'm having on is a person who's, like, a foot model fetishist, which I think is, like, really just interesting. And it's just so...
Oh, it's so great.
Why not, you know?
Why not?
Yeah.
It diversifies the show even further.
Yeah.
At, like, a whole other level.
And I think it makes it so that, like... Yeah, I'm trying to help everybody in whatever little way.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, ultimately help myself. Like,
that
was really how... Not exactly how this all started, but, like, kind of how it all started.
How did it all start?
Kind of two ways. I did this and called it Sunday Night Sex Talks in college. So in college, my girlfriends and I, on Sundays, sat down and talked about sex. kind of by happenstance once, and it was so fun and interesting, and we realized
how... But it was
how,
one of those things, like, that was, like, a repeated social event that you, like, labeled.
Yes.
So then it was, like, girls.
Like, literally everything in college.
Seriously. My two of my best friends in college, we would, every Monday night, we would watch WWF wrestling and eat Taco Bell.
Perfect. So it was, like, ritualized, and it was interesting, and it made me realize these were best friends of mine, and actually, guys were included sometimes, too. We had sat next to each other and watched every single episode of Sex and the City 3 times. And yet, I didn't know that Carly's boyfriend wanted to talk dirty, and she didn't know what that meant. Like, there was still barriers to what we would say to each other.
In your tight friend group.
In my tight friend group.
Well, I mean, that's our culture and vulnerability.
Totally.
100%.
So,
like, how do you make the jump from being like, this is something that my girlfriends and I do every week, to like, I could make a show out of it?
So I was like, oh, we're gonna write a book. My friend Katie and I were like, we're gonna write a book, and it's gonna have a pink cover. That was Katie's thing. And we were like, okay. So we start writing this book about like what we uncovered, and I don't know, it's just, we always knew we had something, but then we got jobs and like had to make money. It just like went away. I come to LA. I do a play that I had written at Bar Lubitsch. It was called The Hookup Conversations, but it was like, I scripted it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is before I knew you guys.
Yeah.
So I script this play, and it was a really good experience. It helped me meet people. I was brand new here, and I had developed a relationship with Lubitsch, and they were like, do you have another thing? We'd love to get more of this performance stuff at our venue. And I was like, no, I don't have another thing, but in my head was always this, I gotta do something with Sunday Night Sex Talks. And I was having this weird experience where I was brand a year into town, and I really didn't know enough people, specifically women. And I was trying to get on people's storytelling shows, and no one would, it's not that they wouldn't have me, they just like didn't know me. I wasn't proven.
Totally. And it's the quickest way to get on a storytelling show, or for any like stand-up comedian or whoever,
yes,
it's like, start your own.
I know, but
get your own mic.
I think back to that. Do you ever have this experience where you think back on decisions your former self made, and you're like, who the fuck did that person think they were? Like, where did that courage come from?
Sure.
I can't believe I did this. I still can't believe it.
And then it's such a thing.
And it wasn't, though. Oh, my God. I would come home crying to Robbie. Like, 3 shows in a row, it was the performers, one person, and me.
No.
Yeah. And I was like,
yeah, sure.
I was like, no, I can't do this anymore. It's too embarrassing. Because I was booking great people because Robbie knew some people, Molly knew some people, people knew people, and they were willing to do the show.
Yeah.
But like, I just didn't know how to get people there.
It's hard.
Yeah. And I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to promote it. I didn't know how to, I didn't have a regular monthly spot. Like, everything was, I was doing everything wrong.
Good for you for fucking staying the course.
Because, you know, what it was, like, what would happen in that room was fucking awesome. And I knew it. And people that were there
knew
it.
That's the thing. It's like, when it works, it works. So
I knew, and Michelle Buteau was like...
Were you all ladies? You were all ladies from the get-go.
Yeah, we were. That was the thing that I just felt like was unique, and I wanted to try it out. And that was, it's 50% of the population can't come.
Yeah.
It's 50% of your audience option.
But still, like, there is something about, like, that first inception of, like, all-lady performers, all-lady audience... It is sacred.
It was
like,
huge. Yeah. People would cry. People would laugh. It was nuts. Crazy things would happen.
Yeah.
And I give Michelle Buteau a lot of... She and actually Kulop, whose last name I won't mispronounce, Kulop Vilesak, who is very much in the Earwolf community, and Michelle did my same show, and it was one of those shows where like 7 people there, and both of them were like, do not give up on this.
Yeah.
People will come. It'll happen.
Yeah.
Don't give up.
Yeah.
And these are women who now... I mean, they're killing it, but like they had come, they're probably 7 years older than me, and they had just done it longer.
Yeah.
Seen it happen.
Yeah.
So I really, I can like feel in my stomach what it was like when no one showed up. Oh my God, it was so bad.
I
was just like tap, dance, like nuts.
I do that before every show.
Yeah. I still do it too.
In between when I get to the venue and when the show starts, I always just say to myself, like, if no one comes, this will be the last show.
I know. Of course. Well, not only that.
That's awesome. Thank you.
It's a really good BLT. Best BLT in the world.
I love it.
Thank you very much.
Amazing. Thank you, man.
I do this thing. How dumb is this? This is like a real therapist moment. UCB would absolutely let me know how many people have RSVP'd or how many people have brought pre-tickets, but I don't ask them because I don't want to know. Because I'd rather just imagine it's 20. And then I get there and they tell me. But I could find out in advance and I don't.
Well, and then
it's crazy.
I mean, I think, like, there's so much bravery to hosting a mic, hosting a show, hosting, because it is, especially in LA, so hard to get anybody anywhere.
I know. And one of my big problems now is 10:30 is too late. It's way too late.
Is so that I'm where pushing. You guys are at right now?
I've asked for an earlier time. I'm on the list for it, but the benefit of UCB, it's known. You get people who are going there because of the name on a Saturday night. You get their promotion. You get the credibility.
Yeah.
The tough thing is there's a lot of competition for spots.
Yeah.
I feel like you need to say...
This BLT looks insane.
We're here at the Eagle Rock Public House where Joe has ordered...
The...
BLT. Describe the thickness of the bread, Joe.
First of all...
At least 1.5 inches.
First of all, you called it the best BLT.
I did. You're right.
And then the waiter even said it's the best BLT in town. Now...
And he's like... You know, he works here, but he's cool.
It's a BLT, and like when I picked up this half of sandwich, it like has some weight to it.
Yeah, so, a lovely tomato. I mean, I guess we don't need to describe what's in a BLT.
Is this bread
a B, an L?
Is
a T.
This there's plenty of L.
Yeah.
There's like just enough T.
Yeah, but
and there's
a
like
B.
A lot of B.
And that's a thick cut B.
Also, like,
what is the bread?
What is the bread? Is it
it's
sourdough?
It's a country bread. Oh, I think it is a sourdough. Let's have a bite.
It looks insane. All right, I'm gonna do this.
It's
I'm going in. I'm going for the meatier end.
Okay, good. Great choice. Watch the roof of your mouth. I find that to be a particularly challenging.
It's, I know, because it could like...
Scratches.
Holy shit.
It's really good, right? And the mayonnaise is more than just mayonnaise. I think it's an aioli.
It's definitely an aioli.
Which means what?
I love... It's like mayonnaise plus
olive
herbs.
Oil? Oh,
olive
herbs.
Oil.
Okay,
yeah, right?
Okay, good. Now I know. Well, I'm really glad you ordered.
Holy shit. Oh, you're living vicariously through me. Although...
I've had it several times.
Creme fraiche looks unreal.
It's a great salad.
Little gem. I love a little gem salad.
I love a little gem too. Anyway, we kept going, and here we are.
You kept going, and here you are.
Yeah.
I dig it. I dig that.
Do you feel also? This happens every month. The rest of my life, my career, takes so much time for a single thing to come to fruition.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that this happens every month, like if it's bad, it's bad. It's good, it's good, and then it happens again and it's over, is like, I really need that.
Mm-hmm. There's some like...
Very gratifying.
I mean, at this point, like, there's something that you always know is coming.
Yes. Yes.
And it's something to occupy your energy.
It really is. And it's something to take me outside of my world, which I need to do more of, as we said, but like, yeah, it really is.
And you look at like your website or whatever, and see how many shows you've done?
Yeah.
I mean, how many shows have you done?
I don't know. I mean, I guess... What's 12 times?
Six.
I mean... And then the New York shows, I guess, too.
Oh, that's true. You've gone on the road, too.
Gone on the road.
I mean...
The New York shows are always so stressful because that's my home. That's like my family comes. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. That was...
It's hard.
My parents came to one show. After our first year, I feel like after we did 12 shows, I did like one big show.
Yeah.
And they came to that show. I try to like glaze over my shit.
Because you're like.
Make everybody else do the heavy lifting.
Yes, I certainly do when I'm hosting there, but like, who knows what other people are going to say, right? Like, and I do feel to a certain degree this is like a different topic, but. I have evolved in a...
This is the best BLT I've ever had.
I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
See you here tomorrow.
I mean, I might have to.
Yeah, it's really good.
This is delicious.
It's really good. Good. I have evolved in confidence, in the way I carry myself since leaving New York. And I think I am at my core the same person, but I think I'm willing to... go to places and say things and talk about things that I perhaps wasn't when I was there. So that's, it makes it a little funky.
Yeah.
To be like, this is who I am now.
Like, take it or leave.
This is what I talk about.
Yeah.
this is what I believe in. This is what I think we should all be talking about. So that's and I don't get a bit of pushback. I think a little bit of it is more just the discomfort of like me walking into that and being like, well, all right.
Do your family comes?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Love it.
They do, and you know they.
It's the test. It is like that's such a test, especially like I feel like the same with our show. Like
yes.
If we're calling it like, and also like, I mean, I'm sure you do the same thing because mm-hmm. whenever I send an email out to like a lineup, I'm always like, all right, like I want, this has got to be true stories. They got to be stories where you're not the hero or the victim.
Uh-huh.
They got to be stories where you're the asshole. Like, and if I'm asking them to mm-hmm. mind their life for that, then I got to mind my life for that. And if I'm asking them to like get up on a mic and sacrifice their pride and ego, then I've got to do the same thing.
Well, especially because you open the show, which is like an interesting, it's very interesting because I did not intend to tell a story when I first conceived of the show.
Right.
I was like, I'll host this, I'll share some anecdotes, but I will not perform every show.
Yes.
And a friend who is an agent and a friend who is a performer had very different takes on that. My agent friend was like, that is an opportunity to have your work, your writing work live mm-hmm. once a month, you gotta do it. Mm-hmm. And a performer friend was like, you set the tone. So the dynamic that you bring and the vibe and the energy and the spirit is gonna, people are gonna follow that. Like, obviously people have their stories. Often they're set. But a good performer hears the vibe and matches it.
Definitely.
Elevates it, you know, every time.
I had the same thing. I feel like I told a story every time at first and mm-hmm. was going to have a different host every show at first. Mm-hmm. I had Judith Shelton. She's a stand-up comic.
I wasn't at that
she's
one.
She's wonderful. Mm-hmm. It was like our second show.
Mm-hmm.
It was at the Virgil. She hosted. She was wonderful, but mm-hmm. I decided to host so I wouldn't have to tell a story every time.
Yeah.
But then the times when I didn't, everybody was always like, nah, you can't cop out like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good point.
I also think it's a compliment. Like, I'm at your show for your curation of a show, mm-hmm. for the people you know, but like also for you, mm-hmm. you know, like you, like the question about, you know, being like the godmother of something, like when you're like the godfather of something, you like make everyone feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I actually think it's a big piece of it. And I've like actively worked on my hosting. Actively worked on like how do I say things really naturally, how do I like come out and really be myself, because it especially when I moved to UCB I was nervous
totally, and also I know when I'm not, now I can tell, it's been long enough where I know when I'm doing it and I know when I'm not,
totally,
like I know when I'm on autopilot,
totally,
or I know when I'm not connecting, uh-huh. or I know when I've gone too far or whatever. Mm-hmm. So when you go to New York, mm-hmm. Any people from high school ever?
I don't think.
You guys doing okay?
Amazing. So awesome, man. Thank you.
I don't know if I've ever had someone in the audience that, like, is from my romantic or sexual past. I don't know. I certainly haven't told a story.
Do you name names?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. Like, the story you did for our show.
Oh, yeah.
You name names.
Definitely. Especially the names of the people who threw the eggs.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I definitely name names.
That infamous
that's
Halloween
innocent,
night.
I feel like that's different than being like this guy who like I slept with and then he ghosted me. I don't know though, like he did it.
Yeah, I mean like
I think it would be different if it was a story, a darker story, right? A story about, and I feel very fortunate to not have this story, but like a story about assault.
Yes.
A story that implicates something that someone did to someone else. Like I would not choose to name names.
Yeah.
Most of my stories are, I'm the name to be named. Like, I'm the one that needs...
Really?
Should be protected.
Oh, yeah,
for
totally.
A choice I made. Or, like, everything's pretty innocent. Like, from a time when, like, I think we all knew. We didn't know what we were doing.
Like that, like this infamous Halloween night.
Yeah.
So, okay.
It's funny that, it's really funny.
Wait, what do you guys call it, though?
Mischief Night.
Mischief Night.
And I did not... It's like a story from my past that I just never really dug into. And I was telling it to Robbie once, and then I was telling it to you guys at dinner. Mm-hmm. But I had already told it to Robbie, and he was like, holy shit, like, I've never heard a story from you that, like, gets to the heart of who you are more than this story.
That's so perfect.
And he had told me, I mean, I had told dozens of stories at that point, but I do think, and, you know, maybe it's like a buried memory because it was such a visceral moment. Like, it was such a moment for me.
Mischief Night.
Yeah.
What year was this?
So it's got to be, because I am in eighth grade. So it's got to be.
So you're not in high school yet.
No, I graduated from high school in 01. So that means I'm in eighth grade in, 98? 97? I don't know.
Yeah, 97?
Okay, 97.
I'm so good at math.
That's incredible. What was that? 01 minus 4? How did you carry the one in your head?
I'll tell you what I do with math.
Use your fingers.
When people say, is it 97? I say, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it.
That's what I need to do.
I have no idea.
Me neither. So, yeah, it's 97. It's my third, it is the third opportunity I have had to attend Mischief Night. And, like, maybe we should say, so Mischief Night in Freehold, New Jersey is when the night before Halloween, all the kids who are, like, old enough to be out alone but young enough to still think this is cool, toilet paper, they toilet paper and they egg the houses. And it's, like, such a known, like, innocent thing that the cops are kind of like, go have fun, kids.
Whatever.
Yeah. Because everyone is white. I should say that.
Yes. So they're,
Everyone's just like, it's just kids. It's just kids being kids.
They're going, like, to do it.
There's a good amount of property damage involved. Like, you egg a house with non.
I mean.
Yeah, and, like, egg a house with non-plastic siding. Like, I don't know. You have to scrub that off. Unsure.
Yeah.
So I
think pressure washer?
I think that's why we do the eggs. I don't know.
Also, like, if toilet paper gets wet, it, like, doesn't it? If you TP a place, it gets wet, it hardens.
It's disgusting.
You,
but very important.
It's key to the whole process.
Yeah.
You're a good kid. You are.
But, like, an aggressively good kid. I'm a nervous kid. I'm a rule follower. Yeah. I have a, I have a relationship with authority where I want them to really like me. My parents are, like, very known in the community. So I'm also, like, there's not a lot I can get away with, right? Like, they're going to find out, and it's going to come back and, like, tarnish the name of the Rosinettes, which is what my younger sisters and I are.
Oh my god.
Called. And, like, Rosinettes don't toilet paper houses.
It just feels right. It just feels right when you say it.
But I am also going through this thing where it's like, this is my last year before high school. Who am I gonna be in high school, right? Am I gonna be this same kid?
Do you go to a different school?
So you move to, like, a larger high school, but it's districted the same, so I'm gonna follow these kids to the next place, and then more kids are gonna be there.
But it is an opportunity to, like, reconceive of yourself.
100%. I feel like the summer between 8th grade and high school, like...
Because I'm all about that. I am all about,
I got a bikini.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you did.
From Victoria's Secret.
Yeah. Hell yes. That's a real bikini.
It was big.
Yeah. It's a woman's bikini.
But in 8th grade, I'm nervous. What do I think is going to happen? I guess that we're going to get in trouble and then I'm going to... I don't know, like, what the fear really is. Like, I don't think I'm going to go to jail. I just think that I'm going to have this deeply uncomfortable interaction with, like, a policeman or, like, an angry homeowner, and I'm going to feel bad forever.
So that's what you're worried about. That's the fear.
I guess so. But I have an equal fear of not being cool.
Yeah.
I'm being totally left out.
Yeah.
But I want to be very clear. I'm not cool. Like, it's not in my bones at that point. Now it's like all I am. Joe.
I mean, oozing out of every pore.
Yeah, well, I got bangs.
Come on, your hair looks amazing.
I just want
that to be.
Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
You can't see the BLT or my bangs, but they're equally good.
There's BLT.
I'm glad you're still enjoying it.
If I was gluten free, I would still eat this bread.
Okay, that's good to know. Maybe that'll be my cheat. This will be my cheat
item.
It's
insane.
So on Mischief Night, you, to conceal yourself from the cops that aren't coming, you wear all black. But I don't have a lot of black because I'm just very cheery as a person.
Gotta have vibrance
and
color.
So the only all black look I have is a black corduroy jumper that's a dress that's overalls. That's what we call a dress that's overalls. And a black turtleneck and black tights and black jazz shoes.
So,
you know what a jazz shoe is, Jeff?
Yes, I do.
It's a soft shoe.
Which,
soft shoe.
Can we say
good,
sort of applicable for the
why
for
I
the endeavor.
Why I wore it. Also, I had black snow boots, but that would be too loud.
Let me say this: dressed all in black on mischief night, yeah. Still looking like an A student.
100%.
In my mind.
A librarian.
Oh.
So I show up. Whatever. I'm not feeling great about this. And my dad. Who are the participants? I should have said, yes.
The hooligans that you fell in line with.
Among the also good kids of the school, just like a tick cooler. Two ticks cooler. Five ticks cooler. I don't know. A lot of ticks cooler, but cooler. But like good kids, which is why like mischief night is for everyone. It's not just for the bad kids. And yeah. In fact, to prove this point, we're leaving from Amy Cassidy's house and her parents are like making nachos for us before we leave. So we're not sneaking around.
So even the parents are like, yeah go out
it's
and like
innocent fun. It's like parents who are like, drink in our house so you can learn how to drink. They're like, mischief night on our property so you can learn how to mischief night. I don't know. So it's Amy Cassidy, it's Joe Clausen, it's Jeff Miller, it's Bill Neskis. There were a lot of Bills. It's Bill Cosentino.
Oh, that's right. I do recall
a lot of Bills.
Two Bills. Yeah.
It's all my friends. Katie Allen. There are a couple more people. I feel like we were rolling like seven deep.
I love it that it. Well, so were you all first timers to the whole mischief night?
Of course not. Of course not. Everyone else has done it many times before. Some of these people have been doing it since they're like in fourth grade. Fourth grade, I think, is the earliest you can mischief night.
Okay.
So my dad drops me off, and I don't know if I told this in the original story, but I feel like this is critical to it. My dad used to say this thing to me.
No, yes, you definitely told this at the No, you told this, and you told this at the show, too.
Okay, good.
Which I think this is so key.
I think it's
so key
to my whole entire psyche.
Yeah,
my dad drops me off in the Sienna minivan, tan, and before I get out of the car, and you know what? I don't remember if he knows what I'm going to do, but like, how could he not know it's the night before Halloween?
They knew.
Like, we didn't talk about it, but he drops me off anyway. And he says to me in his most stern voice, "You are who you are when you aren't being watched." And then he repeats it for dramatic effect.
Is there a moment, a pause between the two utterances?
He says, he starts, "Remember, you are who you are when you aren't being watched. Beat, you are who you are when you aren't being watched."
For emphasis.
Have
for
fun. Emphasis. Pick up a 10. 10. Did you catch that? 10. That's
oh,
very
man. Like, gotta be in by 10.
Maybe 10:30 at that
oh,
point.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
So it's like throbbing in my brain, that statement.
You really took it to heart.
And like, my dad's a good person. My parents are good people.
Yeah.
So I believed it. I believed that that was right.
Well,
I believe
you're still at
that
the
that
age
right.
where, yeah, it's like what things they say have
yeah.
still have a lot of impact.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Now I feel like you get to a certain age and your parents say things and you're like,
none
well,
of
that's
right.
ridiculous.
You don't know me.
You're ridiculous.
Take a look at yourself in the mirror.
And old. And
yeah, it's
your
so
generation
true.
Is
but it
over.
Landed. It landed. But I was still going through with it, of course. And so I'm like counting down. He probably dropped me off at 8. We probably headed out at.
So this whole story takes place
over
no,
the course
wait.
Of like 2 hours,
2 hours
3 hours.
Yeah.
We head out at like 8:30. So I'm like an hour and a half, an hour and a half. All I had to do was an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And my plan is to look like I'm doing it without doing it.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna like. It's like when you, like, take a shot and throw it behind your shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm going to throw the egg on the ground.
Yep.
And I'm going to unwrap the toilet paper and then, I don't know, stand behind someone.
It sounds like a sound plan to me.
Yeah.
Like,
and it works. It works for the first few houses. I'm fine. It's fine. We're not getting caught. Everyone's having a great time. But I'm, like, fine with my plan.
Yeah.
And I should say that with us.
Were you having a good time? Like.
No, absolutely not.
Really?
No, I'm not having a good time at that point. Because I'm so nervous. And I'm so feeling like I'm doing
each
it wrong.
House are you? Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So, like, you
yeah.
feel that you're doing mischief night wrong.
Oh, I'm absolutely doing mischief
are you
night
worried
wrong.
About getting caught? Or is that
yeah.
not really enter into it?
I'm worried about getting caught.
It's the social thing. It's like the social.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with us is this guy, Mark Patel. And Mark was a better kid than most in terms of just, like, rule following. Like, all of these are good kids. I don't want to paint them in a bad light.
Right, of course.
But, like, Mark was, like, a little bit more straighter edge than the rest of them.
Okay.
And I had this... There was rumor that Mark had a crush on me.
Ooh.
So I was kind of using Mark as this... He was kind of hanging back with me. He was kind of letting me stand behind him and throw the... Not throw the toilet paper. He was kind of, like... being an accomplice to my lack of involvement.
That's very noble of Mark.
It was.
Right?
But then we got to Mrs. Wessel's house.
Right.
We didn't know we were going to hit it. I didn't know we were going to hit it, but then I was like, of course we're going to hit Mrs. Wessel's house. And she's the home ec teacher.
Right.
And people are kind of like, even at that time, they're like, hashtag me too, fuck home ec. They weren't. But she had to sew, and people were very angry about that, and iron. And
have they phased home ec out? I feel like.
Not at that point. I mean, now they probably have. But, you know, I liked Mrs. Wessel. Shocking no one. I liked ironing. I thought she was just trying to help us be adults, goddammit.
I feel like that.
But at Mrs. Wessel's house, the kids went. I call them the kids. My friends.
Those kids.
Those crazy kids.
Those people of my same age.
They went crazy. They were having so, there was a joy and a fun and a release, and Mark did it too. Mark
because
Patel.
Of who she was, because of who she was as a teacher.
Yeah. And it was just like, this is what Mischief Night is for.
To get it out.
Get it out. Yeah. It's us against them.
And you were still not.
I wasn't, but Mark was. Mark went for it at this house.
Ooh, it sort
so
of
now
broke,
I have no ally.
Yeah.
And now I am seeing the joy on the faces of these friends. And my dad's statement is ringing in a different way. I am who I am when I'm not being watched. And that is a pussy. That is someone that can't have fun.
I just want that to be crocheted on a throw pillow for you. Oh my
on
God.
On one side it says I am who I am. And then the back it says a pussy.
Dot, dot, dot.
I want this to be a reveal. A reveal pillow.
Oh my God.
So I see it and I feel it in a totally different way. And I'm just like, oh God, I got this all wrong. It's fine to do this. In fact, it's good. It's good for me. I need to do it.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the final house. And it's like, I don't know, 10 minutes from the time that I'm supposed to be picked up. So this is it and this is it.
So you learned the lesson, or you learned your lesson.
Yes.
At Mrs. Wessel's
house. That's right.
But still did not participate.
Not yet.
Saved it for the next house.
Not yet. I watched it go down, and I had my moment. Yeah, my moment for sure. So we go to the final house, and we know it's the final house. I know it's the final house for me because of timing, but it becomes the final house for everyone because it starts to rain.
Right.
And so we were like,
on cue. Perfectly.
It was really beautiful. I don't know if someone says, like, last house or whatever, but we're, like, running out of the 6 dozen eggs that we brought at this point. And so at the last house, I decide I'm going to do it. I'm going to, 2 eggs in hand. I'm
last chance,
really,
going into high school.
This is it.
Let's change it up.
Yeah. And so I hurl my 2 eggs with all the frustration of a pent-up goody-two-shoes at this ranch-style home. And I see the eggs connect with the siding. And then the house fucking explodes. And it explodes in a way with lights flashing that I am certain I'm seeing a mirage.
I've never heard of this before.
Like a mirage of my greatest fears have come true. So much so that I like don't react for a second because this can't be real. Like it can't be that my egg hits the house and the house just lights up. This must be my inner psyche.
Was there the sound alarm or it was all visual?
At first it's lights.
Okay.
And we all stop because what the fuck? And then the alarm starts to sound. This kind of like whoop, whoop, like we've triggered an alarm, and the alarm comes with these lights. And so at the alarm sounding, people are like, what the fuck is going on? And people are like, we gotta run. And there's like a hubbub of what are we gonna do? What's the decision? And I mean, seconds later.
So much panic. So much. That would be the, for as much trouble as I got in, not so much as a kid, but like, as I got a little bit older, that is the moment. Yeah. That would be, oh man.
Seconds later, though, takes a real turn, Joe. A woman comes to the door and she opens the door and she's screaming. And I can tell that she's not like, get off my lawn screaming, right? She's confused and scared and upset. And at the sight of that woman, everyone takes off except for me and Mark Patel.
Oh, Mark.
My ally is back.
Mark.
And she's screaming.
What a sweet boy.
And she's waving her hands. And
does she see you immediately when she comes out the door?
And she's screaming at us. like, not you did this, but like, what's going on? Help me. Because she doesn't know what's going on. And so she's making these hand motions, and it like all comes together in my head. And I realize that she's deaf. and that the hand motions are signing.
Oh.
And that the alarm system is because it alerts her, a deaf woman, about intruders. Because how else would she know? And it just like... It just like comes
Which I've
all...
never heard of that kind of alarm system.
Yeah,
before.
And I mean, in Freehold, New Jersey. Pretty impressive.
Totally.
Makes all sense.
Total sense.
So I. It's a
was
clear
she
choice.
Not? So, like, how big is Freehold?
I don't know. 10,000 people?
Okay.
Maybe bigger, but like 10,000 people.
So you weren't aware of.
No. I'm not aware
and
of this
No
woman.
One knew about.
I'm not
I feel
aware
like
of this
where
house.
I grew up, like. In the rural Midwest, people would be like, yeah, that's the deaf house.
Yeah, no.
There would be like only one person in town that's deaf, so. Okay.
No one knows.
That makes sense, okay.
So like, I have two choices. I run or I go. I run or I stay, right? I run or I go to her and calm this woman. And I know like two signs. I think I know two signs, two, three signs. Like, I know how to sign I love you.
Yeah.
And I know how to sign like clapping hands. And so I'm just like, big as I can, like an aircraft controller, I'm signing like, I love you, clapping hands, I love you, clapping hands.
Hey, woman, you gotta go with what you know.
But I just wanted to express to her that like, I am friend, not foe.
Yeah.
I love you, I applaud you. Can you fucking imagine this woman? And Mark,
I'm sure she's so fucking confused.
Towards her, because remember it's raining, I'm wearing all black.
That's right.
I'm stepping towards her because I just want to calm
right.
And Mark is like, I guess I'm in this. This girl doesn't put out I mean, after this.
Then this was all for naught.
Fast forward, I didn't. But so I go all the way up to her, and now I'm like with her.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to say like, I'm sorry. I don't have signs for this, of course, but like, mischief night. I don't fucking know. I'm just like standing with her at this point, and so is Mark. And
is she like? Has she like?
She's calmed down, but she's upset. I think she gets it. You know, I don't know.
Well, and in Freehold...
Maybe she never got it.
Are a lot of people trying to, like, break into houses?
No.
So, like, maybe that alarm system has never gone off before?
It's felt like it from her reaction.
Yeah.
And then the cops come, because that's what the alarm triggers.
It immediately calls.
Of course. So the cops come to the house where I'm standing with Mark Patel and this woman, and they're like... What happened? And I have to tell them. And they're like, of course they know Mischief Night, but now they're kind of required to ask, like,
you didn't
who
lie.
Did this?
You didn't?
No. I didn't lie.
You could have.
I didn't protect anyone either. I was like, you know, a group of kids started at the Cassidy house, and we're so sorry. And that was it. And then, you know, I stayed for a few more minutes, and then I walked back, and my dad was in the driveway.
Of the house?
Yeah, of the Cassidy house. Because it was past time. He was sitting there waiting for me. And I didn't go in the house. I just got in the car and I left. And the cops did go to the house and did kind of like lightly reprimand
poke
the kids.
Around, ask some questions, be like, yo.
To do what they had to do.
Yeah.
You know, tell them like that wasn't cool and you scared that woman or whatever. But I wasn't there. And it was, I mean, the pain of like, that woman and going to her was like one thing. The pain of being home and wondering what all these friends were thinking of was like a whole nother thing. And, you know, obviously we didn't have text message. Like, I wasn't hearing from anyone. Like, there was AIM. Was there? Yeah, there was AIM. America Online.
For you youngins out there.
But, like, I don't remember, like, jumping on it.
I mean, that part, that's the hardest. That's like the...
I know.
I mean, that's the deepest cut.
I think I called a friend. I don't remember. I like put... I guess I just... But we stayed friends. I think everyone knew it was shitty.
Also, legitimately though, no one really got into trouble. So
no one
like,
got into trouble. And like... You know what? Like, I did the right thing. And I think that that is what was left in the minds of those friends. Like... Mm-hmm. She did the right thing. Yeah, it's annoying, but, like, she did the right thing.
You were the one that stayed, also.
I was, yeah. I was the one that
You, like, stayed through the heat.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like, at the time, I was just like, oh, my God, these people have, like, lost all respect. I'm never going to be allowed in. And I think, look, I don't think I was the easiest friend to be around in middle school or high school.
Really?
I wasn't willing to go to a place that a lot of them were, drugs-wise, partying-wise. Like,
sure.
But I don't think that they ever didn't respect me. You know?
Yeah, they were great.
Thank you.
This BLT is the best in town.
I know, right?
You're right, yeah.
And I think that's something I had to come to a lot later. Like, these people may have been inconvenienced by me. I may have brought up feelings in them about, like, fuck, should I be doing this? Fucking Jesse Rosen never doesn't do E. I think it was annoying. And I think I would have been fine if I did the E. But I don't think they didn't respect me.
Yeah, I mean, what reason would they have?
Or, like, looking back, I think they're like, you know what? She was just doing her thing. And also, I can't believe I had the wherewithal to stick to that.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Through college, too?
Nope.
There we go.
So it all goes out the window anyway.
Nope.
I mean,
never done hard drugs, never robbed a bank. Like, I've stayed on it. I like how those are my two examples.
I like those two examples because although they're in a category,
yeah,
they're so far apart.
Yeah. Does it make you think like those are things that were presented to me as options?
I really appreciate the fact that you brought it up.
Yeah.
Because
they were not presented.
That makes me feel good because you said the first one and I was like, well, I did a lot of hard drugs. And then when you said robbed a bank, I was like, well, never done that. Yeah. So
I've like still been good. Casually offered cocaine, but like nothing else. People just like look at me and they're like, this is a waste of time.
I'm not gonna even get into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I stayed on the fair side of it, but I think I in college and certainly after, I needed to like prove to myself that I could sow the oats I was comfortable sowing.
We all,
and
I mean,
did, and I was fine.
I love the fact that you stayed the course through high school, though.
I can't believe I did, but I did. Yeah, I did.
Also, above a certain level, if anybody. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people from, I mean, I think certain people from experienced high school in one way, but there has to be an age where, like, grudges don't really get held anymore, especially, like, especially in friend groups. I mean, I understand, like, people are bullied, people are outcasts, like, it's very hard to come back from that sometimes, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was there to hold a... There's nothing to hold a grudge against you.
No, and you know what? The other thing I didn't do was shove it in their faces. Like, you're bad and I'm good. Or you're
like
whatever.
I did the right thing.
How dare you? Like, no, I was also not about that. I was
did you
just
and Mark
like,
Patella get together at all?
You know, we didn't. He had a party at his house and invited me, and everyone was on E but me, and he did put his tongue to my ear a lot, like everyone was on E. And I allowed it. In honor of the deaf woman.
I'm giving you a pass on this.
Yeah.
Because you stuck with me during the deaf woman incident.
Yeah.
A
lot of rum and coke.
Did you ever find out anything about the deaf woman?
No. Like, I thought about her a lot, though.
That is crazy.
As like a burgeoning writer and storyteller, because I was into that stuff even then. I was like, I gotta go back.
It is a key story. It's such a principal story to your life, I feel like.
Yeah, and it was so, it was like very cinematic. It was very...
That moment with your dad in the car, it's like a movie.
It played out. It really played out. I always find it that moment where I was like, oh, my dad is right, but in a different way than I imagined. I thought it was also kind of a very... You start to kind of... I think that was the first time that I started to question
And that you,
my
like,
parents.
Interpreted advice rather than, like, take it rough, right?
Yeah.
Which is, like, the difference between being a kid and being an adult.
Yeah.
Where we start being like, okay, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
This is how I feel. This is what it means to me.
But then in the end, I took the advice. Because, I mean, look, I was being watched when I threw the eggs, but I was being watched more when I went up to that woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it, you know.
You just wanted her to be okay.
It just couldn't, yeah. It was very.
I mean, you gotta look back at that and have, like, they gotta have, like, such an amount of pride for that to be like, I'm a good person that wants other people to be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It felt easier. It was easier to go to her than not.
Yeah.
For me, and it wasn't easy. Neither thing was easy, right? Both things
were
shitty.
I have an insane, horrible conscience.
Yeah.
It just, like, does not allow me to let horrible things that I do go. So, like, I would, if I were in your shoes and I had fled, I would definitely be sitting on that for years and years and years.
Totally.
And have been like, I just should have gone to her and stayed.
Totally. Or, and I didn't have a lot of that on my conscience because of that fucking line from my dad. So I just, it was, yeah, it felt really clear. And there have been, look, there have been times that there were then times in the future where I certainly didn't do that.
Right.
I didn't do the right thing. I left someone out, you know, out in the cold. But that moment.
Not that time. You did the right thing.
Yeah, not that time. Not that time. So it, yeah.
Do you ever, like, do the thing when you're, so you were saying that, like, you told that story to Robbie.
Yeah.
And he was like, that, you have to, like, was he like, you should tell that? Like, you should make it a story. I sometimes do, because I do not have a very good memory.
Funny.
In fact, I have, like, straight up shitty memory. And I feel like I'll have those moments where an incident from my past will suddenly come to me.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, holy shit, why haven't I thought of that?
Right.
In all the times that I've ever sat down to think of, like, a story relevant to a theme or a story relevant to a show, like, how did I not think of that? Do you ever have that?
It happens all the time. I'm telling a story tomorrow night that was, like, a story. You know, some things don't feel like stories because they're tiny things that happen to us, but then a context around them becomes, makes it a story.
Yes, of course.
So I'm telling a story tomorrow night at my show where I had like found these Cosmopolitan magazines and I would read them at night before I went to bed, and I didn't know what sex was at that point. I'm like 10 years old, but even reading about body parts, like my body started to feel a little warm inside.
Yeah, a little tingly. Yeah.
And one day the magazines were gone. And like, that's an anecdote. I used to read these magazines and then the magazines were gone. But when I really think about what preceded that and then happened after that, there's a story there.
There's totally a story.
About why I was doing that and what the magazines meant and where I found them and then what, how I felt about sexy stuff after the magazines were gone and who maybe stole them and did someone know about me reading
them? That would be what I would be so, like, yeah, did they?
Sometimes, but it's, I find, and you know, this is a weird thing to say, but therapy, going to therapy helps me, has helped me remember the things that have stuck and then see them as bigger pieces of a puzzle.
Interesting.
So when, like, my therapist will ask me something about, like, can you remember a time in your childhood when you felt this same way? And I'll remember a moment from my childhood that's, like, just a moment, and then suddenly it kind of expands a little bit more.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so that's been, like, I have a very good memory for emotional moments. Not necessarily for the details, but the moments are, can be very, very visceral to me. And I wish they weren't. Sometimes I wish they weren't.
I feel like, and I talked to Molly about this a lot, and because she was a person that, like, I feel like she felt she was she knew she was a storyteller for so long, that she would, like, actively make choices in pursuit of material to have later.
I didn't do that, did you?
No. I wouldn't have had that kind of foresight anyway. And I definitely, like, I can sit and, like, scour my life and come up with nothing. And then, you know, I'll be doing something disconnected, like,
I don't know,
in the bathroom or, like, on a hike, and, like, out of nowhere, something will spring to my mind. And then then in that moment, I remember it in pretty vivid detail, but if I'm working at it, my memory is just, like, not flexed.
But I feel like that makes sense. I mean, I don't know where memory is in the brain.
I don't know either.
I don't know anything about the brain.
I don't either.
But I feel like it's, like, in a place that
it's like, it could be magic up there, and I wouldn't.
I think it is magic.
Basically magic, yeah.
So whatever you have to do to, like, unlock the magic, I feel like it's not think about it.
Right.
I think it's, like, whatever they say about, so apparently driving is some kind of, like, rote activity where when you do it, your brain is on a certain kind of autopilot.
Yeah.
And so it allows you to, like, relax into a different place. I don't know, but I get a lot of ideas.
Walks or driving always help.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, which is helpful because, you know, you do run out of stories.
I mean, absolutely. Especially, like, trying to, you know, if you're trying to, like, retrofit a story for a theme or something like that, some bullshit like that.
I know. That part of it gets challenging, but I repeat stories.
Absolutely.
You have to.
Or, like, when something works.
Yeah.
Good God, I'll use it as many times as I possibly can.
How often do you really work on a story? Like, take a story, write it, rewrite it, perform it.
Well, I feel like I don't learn anything until I do it in front of some audience. I don't really, and I mean, I think that I worked for a company in Chicago, or worked with a company in Chicago for a while that produced storytelling shows.
Mm.
And they had a sort of like wrote rubric for what kind of story, or for the story they were looking for. It was something very particular.
Mm-hmm.
And although I appreciate that, it was not something that I was, for some reason, I was not capable of it at the time. And I think, like, I've grown enough to know what I look for from a story.
Right.
And I think it takes me a moment, but I can usually find, like you were saying, I think it's something interesting to think of, like, you think of an incident that seems pretty inconsequential, but when you think of the context around it, all of a sudden it becomes a story. Mm-hmm. And I think, like,
yeah. Well, I like the freedom. A lot of what I do is writing for perfection.
Thank you, man.
Someone else, for notes.
Yeah.
So when I tell a story at my show and when I'm preparing for that, I want to just be free.
Yeah.
I want to think of something, jot some notes down, and just go. It's like such bliss
for me. I do not rote memorize ever.
However, I had an experience recently where I've been telling a similar story for a really long time about this experience I had where my dry cleaner in New York set me up with someone.
Right.
And it's kind of like a
even
story.
Your dry cleaner set you up. That's...
Yeah. So I starched-crossed lovers.
Oh,
that's the name of the story.
God damn, Jesse.
So I was invited to tell a story at this kind of fancier charity event, and it was at the home of Jason Kadams, who created Friday Night Lights and Parenthood, and like it's just a big writing idol of mine. And the direction was to read. You could memorize, but most people, I had been to the show, most people had read. So I was like, okay, this is an opportunity. I am going to work this story to the bone.
Yeah.
I'm gonna write it, rewrite it, perform it at my show, perform it to Robbie. I'm gonna like work it, see where the laugh lines are, record myself, listen to it, like this level of shit, right?
Yeah.
That I had not done in years.
Yeah.
If ever. And I did it, and it killed. It killed
shit.
In a way that I was like, oh.
Oh, this is how you write a story?
I guess you really have to work
on
it.
That's funny.
So it was interesting. And look, that was right for that moment for me and what I wanted and my goal. But
I can see that.
It's not right for every show for me.
Yeah.
But it really proved to me, this is truly a story that I've probably written, rewritten, retold, done in many, many different varieties, both like planned and off the cuff, for 10 years.
Yeah.
So it was really...
That's incredible.
It was really something. It gave me so much... storytelling is different than anything else.
It is different than anything else.
It's certainly different than stand-up. It's certainly different than written work. It's certainly different than scripted, acted work. So...
When we first started... My friend Deepak Sethi would do stand-up at the end of every show. Because I sort of had this thing where I was like, it's sort of all the same.
Yeah.
And man, was I proven wrong.
It's not.
Like, it's not. And the audience isn't, plus the fact that, if the audience is sort of like vibrating on one thing, and then you throw a curveball, it doesn't matter if it's in the same family or not. There's gonna be a disconnect.
Well, I will say, when I'm telling a story off the cuff, I feel like I have the audience. They're with me. We're connected. I'm telling some stuff. Great.
Yeah.
That experience of telling the story that I had prepared, this is gonna sound, vain, I guess, but also kind of like maniacal. They were literally in the palm of my hand. I carried them with me. They were hanging. I took them with me on this. And it was such a different experience.
I love those moments when you just start killing and they're hanging on your every word.
But I had done it in a way, like I had worked on it in a way that was like, now I want you to feel this, now I want you to feel this. And it was like, ooh, this is like why I...
It's so manipulative in a great way.
Great way because it's fun, but it made me realize I think a good film does that. I think a good everything, just like you really carry people and allow them to feel something that you want them to feel.
Yeah, totally.
It's very special.
I have this obsession right now, aesthetically, and I don't know why, with rawness. It sounds so... It basically is like an excuse for me to be able to do things with little production value. I feel that's what it sounds like, but it's not. I really, you know, Alex and I started doing our movie discussion podcast, and we wanted it to be in public places where there was a lot of background noise and where we're eating, and I just wanted it to feel real. And one of the things that I definitely didn't know about Tales of Mount Folly when we started, but what I know now, is that, I mean, there is nothing better than a well-crafted, well-coiffed storyteller who, like, hits their 10 minutes, hits every laugh line, knows every beat, and it's like when the story's in your bones, right? Because even when we do a story that, like Margot always says, she's like, you know, it's your story, so, like, you know the beats of your own story. But also, even when it's a story we've told a number of times, and like you were saying, if it's in a different audience, you sometimes calibrate for that.
Yeah.
It becomes something different.
Yeah.
So you're always finding and discovering and maybe meandering a little.
Yeah.
So you can tell the difference between like when you killed at that charity event and when you tell a great story, but you're still like working through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think like, I think at our show, the value has sort of become, to me, on the performances where maybe the performer doesn't know what they think they know.
That's right.
Because I feel like what we've started to ask of, not necessarily women, but definitely men, and I credit the male performers that we've had on our show because for the most part, everybody's done it.
Yeah.
Is finding that story where you don't really get any redemption.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Or where it's really the story. I remember my friend Joe, his first time on the show, he texted me this story where, or he emailed, he sent me this, didn't text me, he emailed me. He said, I got two stories. One story is about this time when, like, it was, like, some kind of, like, date gone wrong, and I ate too much sushi, and I threw up, and blah, 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 or something like that. Like, I can't remember, because the second story was, like, there was this period of time where I didn't know if I was gay or not.
Oh, my God, I remember that
and
story.
And I was, like...
I was at that show. I invited him to do my show.
That's
it was
right,
so
that's
good.
Right. Oh, my God.
It was so good.
And I was, like, well, you have to tell that second story.
Oh, my God, that moment with the guy in the car.
Oh,
he was in the play. I remember so much about it.
Oh, my God.
See, that's what happens.
Or I had my friend Josh on, and he told the story about like the last time he talked to his brother.
Oh God.
Who committed suicide.
Yeah.
And heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
But I'm like, if it's the hard story, then that too will force you out of a comfort zone. And if I have to like, if I have to have a place for men to come to like where I have to like force that,
I know.
Then fine. If I have to wrestle that out
it's
of them,
huge
fine.
Service.
I'm into it.
I think it's a service to men. I think it's a service to women. I think it's important for women to see men at your show in the way that men really are.
Yeah.
Because I think that women can do a little bit of either expecting or I don't want my man to, whether that's in the back of our head or in the front of our head. Like, it's nice to have a reminder of the humanity of us, regardless of gender.
Of all of us. And at your show, too, I feel like
it's important.
You create a sanctuary. You have created a sanctuary where if even for a moment people can feel like they're going to be unjudged.
Yeah.
Because that, at the end of the day, that's what affects everything. That's when things are good or bad to me.
Yeah.
In like, you know, you go to plenty of, in LA, you end up going to plenty of improv shows or comedy shows or whatever. And Molly and I laughed the other day. And I did very little improv, but she did a ton of it. But yet we both are like, oh, I could never do that because I'm not. No, I am good, but that was delicious. I will have a little more ice cold water.
You got it.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
This place is great. Uh-huh. But I think that the difference between when it's good and when it's bad is when, I mean, whether you get a performer or a storyteller that is either doesn't give a fuck about being judged.
Yeah.
Or whether they know they're, or if they know they're not.
Yeah.
People sort of show their best. or give their best. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that vulnerability is just.
And then the audience can feel it, and you know I've a handful of times at our shows I've seen the audience just that moment where they're like, oh no, he's not.
Oh yeah.
They're not. That's not it.
But sometimes
I can't relate to this.
Sometimes that happens when the performer isn't attaching emotion to it in a way that becomes universally relatable.
Sure.
Because I think you can say pretty much anything.
I think so too.
And if you say, because I was in a place of shame,
yeah,
because I was in a place of loss, like grief, like whatever,
yeah,
and that's really hard because sometimes people don't know. I don't know.
Totally.
You know, when I look back on certain stories.
Sometimes at some of our shows, it's been me who the audience has disconnected from,
sure,
because I'm either an anecdote or like just filling time where I end up maybe telling a story or something from my life where I'm posturing or I'm putting up a front or I'm putting something on. And the audience is smart, and they can detect it, you know?
They can detect
it. As a group.
It,
as like a hive mind.
Yeah, in terms of how genuine it is and how genuine it feels. Yeah, you can really feel that, which is interesting. I feel like I've come to... Sometimes some of the best stories at my show have not necessarily been the best story or the most, you know, finessed storyteller.
Yeah.
But there's a vulnerability that excuses all of that, and you're just...
What is your favorite story?
Oh, man.
Of all of Sex Talks, what's your favorite story?
That's so hard.
And then, two-part question, what's your favorite story of yours? Mm. Sub-question, either A, to tell, or just to tell.
My favorite story... I'm going to go with the first one that comes to mind because I feel like that speaks to it being perhaps my favorite. I don't think this is because I've been a longtime fan of hers, but I've been a longtime fan of the actor Mary Holland.
Sure.
She is a great improviser, a great comedic actress, and she makes me laugh when she acts like more than anyone else. She came on the show, and with more senior performers, I don't like to poke them a lot about what exactly... I asked them for a log line and nothing else.
100%.
So I didn't exactly know what she was going to talk about, but I was preparing to just be rolling, laughing, because she's so funny.
Yeah.
And instead, she told a deeply personal story about an online relationship that she got into with a man that lasted a very long time. And the thing, in addition to it being beautifully told... and incredibly vulnerable, is that as she was telling it, she kept saying, no, that's not true. What really happened is, fuck, no, that's not how I felt. How I really felt is, she was editing
that's
it
my
as
favorite
it
shit.
Went along.
Oh my God.
And I felt, it's my favorite because it was so great, but it's also my favorite because I felt, this gets like a little prideful, but like, I felt like the space allowed her to do that, and I was like, oh my God, like this is my dream come true.
Yep.
For a person like this with a lot of great TV credits, like, you know, people know her.
Yeah.
She has a lot to lose, quote unquote, in terms of like people seeing her. I felt like that was so
I think that shit
special.
Is so smart, and like, and I mean, not smart is the wrong word,
special.
But like, there's something special to that.
And I laughed during her performance, maybe, who knows, I don't give a shit.
I mean,
and she didn't.
I always
she was
think,
not
like,
looking to make me laugh.
If the audience laughs, great. If they listen,
better.
Every time.
Yeah.
What about your? What about for you?
Better.
What's your favorite story to tell?
My favorite story to tell.
Or what is your go-to? What is the one where you're like, oh, I have a show and I don't have a lot of time. What's my go-to?
I feel like my go-to story is not my best story.
Really?
But it's about this time when I was dating this guy who I really, like, really wanted him to like me, and I was in this place where I was feeling very insecure. I had just broken up with a guy who was, like, gay. Definitely, maybe, probably gay. And so I was, like, with this guy, and I was having some body conscious issues, and so I put on this self-tanner, not knowing that it would make him throw up on me when he licked my body.
I remember that story.
Yeah. So it's just, it has a lot of like peaks and valleys, and like has this big crescendo moment, and it's silly and funny, but also kind of vulnerable. But it's not the best, you know, it's just like
it's a pretty great story though.
It's a go-to.
Oh.
I don't know. Some of the best stories to tell. You know, I told a story recently at a show that was like, it wasn't even a story. It was just like a little bit of like, this is where I am right now. Where I was like talking about how like, essentially I feel like in my own, and this is interesting because I don't talk a lot about my sexual life now. I'm a married person.
Yeah.
Not because I don't think it's appropriate, maybe because I want to protect my husband, whatever. But I was talking about, I like got into this conversation about the fact that like, you know, sometimes I feel like I don't exactly know what I want in bed.
100%.
And like, why is that? And what does that look like? And like, what's going on there? And how do I figure that out?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a story about trying to figure that out and what it felt like. That was like less a story and more like a conversation, which I feel like is a little bit of like the evolution of me as host of this show, where I can be comfortable being like, hey, you guys, here's what's going on with me right now. It's not a story. I mean, it is.
But it's, yeah, but it's not.
It's not.
Thanks, man. You're
and welcome. It doesn't have, like, a beginning, a middle, and an end. It has a, here's where I am right now, and here's what I'm struggling with. And so that, when I told that, it felt very, okay, this is something. This is something new.
Oh, I like that.
This is something where I think I'm going.
We also, like, you give your audience nuggets of things to relate to.
Yeah, and I can, put on a show of security and confidence as the host that is true for my past, but not necessarily true sometimes for the here and now. And I don't want to be, oh, Jesse, she knows everything about sex. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to be like that kind of.
She's a sexpert.
I'm not.
Yeah.
And I don't want people to not come to the show because they're like, well, I'm not a sexpert. I'm not a very sexual person. I'm not comfortable with my sexuality, so that show's not for me.
And you want to be like, no, yes, it is.
Exactly,
this is exactly the
it's
show
exactly for
you.
Yeah, so yeah. It feels like I've got to do, that's my job.
I love it.
Moving forward.
I love it. When's your next show?
It's tomorrow night.
That's right. Who's your lineup? Who you got?
So I'm doing something kind of cool in partnership with a friend of mine who put out a book called Moan. Anonymous essays about female orgasm.
Holy shit, awesome.
So for the first time in a long time, it's going to be all female performers.
Great.
And the topic is so close. So it's about any kind of orgasmic release experience. It doesn't necessarily have to be an orgasm.
I love that.
Yeah, so it'll be all women, and we'll talk about the book a little bit, and I think it'll be fun.
At UCB Emma Koenig, Sunset.
Yeah, Emma Koenig is the writer of the book.
Amazing.
Well, she's the collector of the essays.
That's
UCB Sunset, 10:30.
Love it.
I don't know what I'm going to wear.
Come on, you do too.
No, tomorrow, I'm getting my nose pierced. These podcast listeners are the first people to know about this, so I'm going to wear something that matches my new nose piercing.
Jesse Rosen.
I know.
I have to I'll be texting my wife immediately afterwards.
Text her right now. I am. Yeah. On this very street.
I'm so excited for you.
Me too.
Are you so pumped?
Yeah. Well, I've had it pierced before, and removing it was a big regret of mine. That's a whole other story, but I took it out.
I think you look good in an...
we'll see.
Are we going to do stud or
hoop? I'm going to do stud for now.
Okay.
Because my goal, you have to get pierced with like a little CZ.
Yeah.
But I want a tiny gold ball.
Oh, I dig it.
Yeah.
I dig that.
So it's a big night for me.
God, I'm all about, especially now that I'm 37, I'm going to be 38 this year.
Mm-hmm.
I am all about recapturing.
Yeah.
Redoing things for my youth.
My youth, right? You had your gauges.
I stretch my gauges out again, but your husband hates it.
Ew, who cares?
I do. No, I don't. I did. I re-stretched them a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably will.
Right.
A little more.
See what you think.
It's just trying to relive the glory days.
Yeah. Back to our youth.
I'm so glad. This is perfect. This
was
great.
Thanks.
Oh my God.
Thanks, everybody.
Go see Sunday Night Sex Talks.
Yeah. SundayNightSexTalks.com.
Thanks for listening to Tales of Male Folly. If you dug what you heard, please subscribe and or rate us below. If you hated what you heard, tell us what we did wrong so we can try to appease your unreasonable expectations. JK haters, Tales of Male Folly, the podcast, is a Hatbeard production that can also be found on the Extra Credit Network. It's produced and hosted by me, Joe Tower, and executive produced and edited by Brian Weiss. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pippa, and Spotify. Our live show is produced at various venues in and around LA by me, Joe Tower, with the help of Alex Gradette and Brian Weiss. It's presented in partnership with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Greater Los Angeles. For even more details and where and when to see one of our live shows, peep us at www.talesofmalefolly.com or email talesofmalefolly@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram, but not Twitter. Twitter is for trolls and white supremacists. We all know that. Twitter is dead. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.